Hello, this is Chuck Fry, author of the Mind Mapping Software blog. I'm pleased to have with me today the author of an exciting new book entitled The Sketchnote Handbook, The Illustrated Guide to Visual Note-Taking. Mike has a passion for simple and usable design solutions. That passion, along with his lifelong habit of recording concepts and observations through sketching and doodling, inspired him to develop Sketchnotes, a practical art that translates ideas into easily recalled bits of information. Professionally, Mike focuses on user interface, user experience, visual design, and icon design for mobile and web applications. In his illustration practice, Mike uses his unique drawing style to amplify and clarify ideas, and his work has been featured in several best-selling business books. He's also the founder of the Sketchnote Army, a website dedicated to finding and showcasing sketchnotes and sketchnoters from around the world. Mike has also shared his thinking, design process, and samples of his design and illustration work at his personal website, rowdesign.com, since 2003. He lives just outside of Milwaukee, not too far from where I live. He's a Packer fan. Yay! On top of everything else, he's an all-around great guy. I couldn't be happier to see that he has published a book on the form of visual thinking that he was so instrumental in creating and promoting. Welcome to the call, Mike.
Thanks, Chuck. This is great to be here.
Before we get into the questions, Mike, I just want to mention that one of the things I've been trying to do over the last several years is expose the readers of this blog to other forms of visual thinking beyond mind mapping. And this is part of that effort. So let's start with a really basic question. For the purpose of our listeners who aren't familiar with sketchnotes, what are they and what typical problems do they solve for people? How do they make their lives easier?
Well, at their most basic, sketchnotes are regular notes, but make use of visual elements of all kinds to expand and capture ideas that maybe verbal writing and text maybe can't capture fully. So you can start with the regular notes that you take already, but it's the addition of typography to show emphasis on words or drawing, either sketching or doodling, maybe a diagram or an idea that pops into your head as you're listening to an idea that someone's presenting to you or that you're experiencing yourself. And then other elements like stars and icons and dividers and shapes and things that simply help you divide and make sense and structure out of the ideas that you're hearing. One of the other big key things that I've found with sketchnotes is there's an emphasis on filtering and processing it ideas in your head before you put things on paper. So it's a little bit more deliberate than traditional notes. The reason I specify this, my history was coming from a fanatical note-taker perspective. At some point in college, I sort of lost track of the sketchnoting style that I did in high school and college and switched over in business to sort of this hardcore write everything down that you hear mentality, either writing in books or even typing on a computer or whatever. In my case, I happen to carry around these giant books and pencils so that if I made mistakes, I could erase errors. And I tried the best I could to capture every detail that I heard. At some point, it just became too much of a burden, somewhere around the end of 2006. And sketchnoting was born when I decided I have to change something here. What can I do? How can I use limitations to go in a different direction? Because in design, that's what I deal with, limitations. And so I had a Moleskine notebook, a little sketchbook on my desk. I had a gel pen, and I thought that would be about the most 180-degree opposite way from what I had been doing, giant books and pencils, that I could. So I had a limitation on size. And I had a limitation on erasing mistakes because it was all in pen. And so what that did is it forced me to be deliberate and to listen for the ideas that resonated with me, that were meaningful for me. Because in the end, when I came home from a conference or a meeting or so on, having every detail often wasn't what I was looking for. It was what were the takeaways, what was meaningful for me, and how can I apply that? And so that's how sketchnotes are born, and that's what they're built from.
I know what you're saying, Mike. I've gone through a similar evolution from trying to write down everything to just focusing on the main ideas. If you go to a conference for a couple of days, for example, you end up with so many pages of notes that I've found it's often hard to locate that one nugget of information or idea that I'm looking for. And I can see how sketchnoting can help you to visually index information using drawings and typography, like you mentioned, so you can find things more easily. How does sketchnoting differ from graphical facilitation?
I would call those really close cousins, actually. I think the big difference between both graphic recording and graphic facilitation and sketchnoting primarily is size. So graphic recorders and facilitators typically are working on big boards, 4x8 sheets of paper or foam core or what have you. And they're also typically in the front of the room. In the case of a graphic recorder, they're simply recording what they're hearing, whether it's a speaker or speaker and audience, you know, having a discussion, and they're trying to capture what's being said. A facilitator literally is the person in the front of the room facilitating the discussion. So that actually seems really tough to me, to not only be drawing but also guiding the discussion. And it's definitely a learned skill, and I admire those guys. But it tends to be more of a performance in the front. It's large scale, where sketchnoting is a little more personal. It's a little more small scale, because you can be in the audience anywhere and have a small book with you, whatever size you have. And those are kind of the two primary differences, the size and the sort of the personal nature, where I think like a graphic recorder or facilitator maybe has a little more obligation to be neutral in the discussion, where sketch notes tend to be a little more personal and subjective to what I think is important. So there's all probably also finer distinctions between the two that would divide them. But I think they're very close as far as the principles and how they work. And I would love to learn actually how to do graphic recording and see what that's like, having come from this small scale approach, and see what the differences are and what kind of things can I learn and teach other people.
I've read some other materials on graphic facilitation, and often groups do divide the two roles, graphical recording and facilitation, because it is so difficult to do both at the same time.
Yeah, I can't imagine how tough that would be. I'm in a high respect of anybody that can do facilitation while they're drawing, and certainly it could be done because people do it. So right. It would be fun to try it and see what it's like and how different it is from what I'm used to.
As I was looking through the book, Mike, I sensed a lot of commonality with mind mapping here, especially the fact that both mind mapping and sketchnoting engage both sides of your brain. Why is that important today?
Well, I think, you know, ideas come in a lot of shapes and forms. And in a sense, it seems actually kind of a little crazy to only use one channel in capturing those ideas. So if I'm having some ideas and I'm only writing text and words, it seems like you're leaving lots on the table, especially if, you know, I think that we're visual creatures. I think we're built, you know, our eyes process all kinds of visual information. Now we have all kinds of visual information to process compared to like our caveman ancestors or whatever, right? Like they had to, you know, see a deer running and throw a spear into it, where we've got tons of stuff like pouring at us all the time that we have to look at and process. So I think we're built to be visual animals, I believe, and to leave that part of it on the, you know, off the table and not use it. Maybe in some cases it makes sense if you're focusing on, say, meeting minutes, where it's got to be very precise. Maybe sketch notes aren't appropriate there. But I think in a lot of other cases, having either whether you're doing mind mapping or sketch noting, having this additional library of ways of expressing yourself, I think is valuable. And I think the other thing I'm noticing too, as I've showed this to kids, a lot of kids, they grab the book and they really love it immediately, and they seem to want to have copies of it for Christmas. And I think it's because kids think really visually too. And so maybe for the generation coming up, because they are so visually minded, even more maybe than the older generation, this could be an attractive way to make use of all those skills that they've built through their young lives to capture ideas. And maybe instead of doodling to avoid what's being discussed in class, that maybe this can redirect them to doodle the things that they're thinking about that relate to the class. That would be pretty cool.
You know, Mike, one of the things I've learned from studying many types of visual thinking is that the arrangement of the elements in your drawing, your diagram, or a mind map actually conveys both meaning and context.
Yeah, I agree. And yesterday I happened to show the book to some friends, and they all seemed to comment that for them it felt like they remembered better when they were physically doing something. This kinesthetic, you know, movement of the hand seemed to keep their mind engaged in a way that if they just sat and observed, that it was very helpful for them. And one of the so this is not a research book by any means. There wasn't a whole lot of research to be found, and the little bit that I found seemed very, you know, circumstantial or you know, limited. But the one tidbit that I found on, I think it was in The Guardian, they had a group of 40 people, divided them into two groups of 20 each. Half the group listened to, I think it was like an answering machine message with names and phone numbers and so forth. The half of the group just sat and listened. They couldn't do anything. They just sat there and listened to the recording. But then the other half of the group were given pens and paper, and they had apparently shapes. And all they could do was just do crosshatches in these shapes, like rectangles or whatever. So they were active with their hands while they listened. And then they tested afterwards, after the presentation of this audio ended, the two groups were tested, and they found that the people who were doing this physical, you know, doodling, I guess you would call it, because it didn't really, they weren't allowed to like write numbers or anything like that. They were remembering, I think, 29% more than the other group, the control group. So obviously that's a pretty, you know, it's not a lot of people, and it's probably not super conclusive, but that's an interesting, you know, anecdote about how maybe we as people, by being physical while we're listening, that maybe helps us to process and remember a little bit better than if we just sit idly. And so I think that benefits all the visual thinking techniques that you might employ.
Sure, and it seems to support what brain science tells us, that the more senses are involved, the more pathways are formed between the neurons in your brain, and that's what helps us to remember things, those pathways. So I could see how the addition of a kinesthetic element like writing sketch notes by hand could really help you enhance your memory. One of the trends that I'm seeing that supports the use of visual thinking is that the problems businesses are facing today seem to be becoming more complex and ambiguous, and that makes them harder to solve with traditional linear thinking. What are you seeing from your perspective, Mike?
I think it goes back to what we talked about before, why simply, you know, using verbal notes or writing text only is kind of limiting. It's like leaving lots of your skills on the table. I think business people particularly are being challenged now to come up with innovation and ways of solving problems that didn't exist before. There's all these new challenges, and there's no, you know, there are no frameworks for these things that have existed in the past. Like, you know, even manufacturing, things that you would think are pretty traditional are being challenged. And there's the cycle for improvements is increasing ever more quickly. And so I think the demands on making full use of your brain, the whole brain thinking, I guess is maybe the term, really is to benefit to anyone who needs to innovate or solve problems. And, you know, to either write or draw, whether it's on a whiteboard or it's mind mapping or it's sketchnoting or whatever else it might be that's making use of visual and tactile spatial thinking, I think all those things are hugely valuable. And I think it may come to a point where you almost can't operate without those things, that by, you know, going old school where you're just writing text only, that may actually become maybe a limitation.
So do you think then that visual thinking enables you to step back to that 50,000 foot kind of systems level perspective, as well as being able to dig down into the details, kind of like the forest and the trees?
I think so. I think at least helps you move in that direction. I mean, the challenge is always to get your mind to go in that way, to go up to 50,000 feet and be able to look at the problem in a holistic way, and using all the skills that you've got, but then going down deep and also solving problems. In my case, I'm a designer, so I use sketching to solve a lot of my visual problems. But I think that seems like a natural thing, because obviously I'm designing visual things, so it makes sense that I would sketch those. But I think maybe the deeper principle and why these things are valuable, whether it's sketchnoting or mind mapping or even just sketching your concepts with a colleague on a table or a whiteboard, is to describe it. Often I might have an idea in my head about what I'm thinking, and I think that you understand what I'm saying, but you may actually have quite a different idea in your head based on what I've said verbally. But if I draw that, I think that brings us even a little bit closer, and we can sort of, I always talk about sketches being sort of a document that you can at least argue about, right? So maybe I don't come to a solution by giving you a sketch, but at least I get maybe incrementally closer to the solution, because you can see exactly what I'm thinking and I explain it. You can tell me, I don't like this over here, or this is not going to work because of this, and then we can modify it. But it's sort of a common discussion area that we can use as a reference that maybe goes deeper than simply talking or even writing just words down.
That's a great point. The ability to build consensus and shared understanding around a image or a drawing or a mind map is really important. One of the things I sense, Mike, is that some executives, particularly the old school executives, will look at sketchnotes and say, "That's frivolous. Why should I even pay attention to sketchnoting? Regular notes are just fine for me." What do you say to people who just don't accept the idea of sketchnoting and the benefits it can bring?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's certainly value in it. I can certainly see also there being maybe old school or people that are pretty set in their ways that do traditional notes and they think it's just fine. And, you know, I'm not here to say that your regular notes are bad or they don't work for you, because obviously they do. And, you know, I sort of also subscribe to the idea, like, you know, hey, I can't make you do anything if you don't want to do these. Certainly you don't have to. But I think there's an opportunity to try something and see if this works for you. And my solution, or at least my suggestion for people that maybe are, a lot of people say, "I'm not an artist and I can't do that." The book addresses that quite a bit. But also this idea that it's difficult and I don't want to go 100% sketchnote. And that's fine. I think the beauty of this whole process is you can sort of integrate it slowly as you feel more comfortable. And I usually suggest, you know, take your regular notes just like you always do and maybe mark off maybe a quarter of the page on your notes, and just mark it off ahead of time so that when you write your notes, you know, you leave this white space up there, and let your regular notes happen. But as things come to your mind, if you get images in your head about ideas that you're hearing, or even something as simple as drawing a little picture of the person who's speaking, you know, in times when you're not writing notes and you just want to switch over and try these techniques, or if it's writing, like, maybe listen for the most important idea that this person is presenting to you, but doing it bold in that one quarter of the page or one eighth of the page, you know, to try it out, and then continue that as you take your notes and see what you think about it. Give it a try, and, you know, if it works for you, continue to go, and maybe then you go to half a page and maybe three quarters of a page, and then maybe you're fully into it over a period of time. And, you know, then if it doesn't work for you, then you shouldn't feel obligated to do it, but I think at least giving it a try is certainly worth exploring. And I think, you know, you may find, surprisingly, that you've got more visual stuff happening in your head than you realize. And once you sort of make space for it, it makes it a lot easier for you to start thinking that way and capturing ideas, even if it's, you know, like I said, a drawing of the person. Because I think when you come back to those notes, that drawing of the person as well as your handwritten notes are going to make a more complex, integrated map, let's say, of what you were listening to. I think sometimes drawings capture these moments in a way that writing words maybe doesn't quite capture. So that, I think there's some advantages there, and it's, you know, worth giving a shot, I think.
A lot of the sketchnoting examples that I've seen on your blog are focused on capturing ideas from live presentations. What other thinking applications of sketchnotes are there?
You know, that's actually an interesting question. And as I started developing the idea that, hey, this is working for going to conferences or presentations, that seemed like that was a pretty solid way to go. Where else can I take this? And so a couple of things that I've done with it that are not live presentations, one big one for me were travel documentation. So like a travelog. I've done it several times. One of the ones that I had most fun with was taking a small Moleskine sketchbook on an Alaskan cruise a couple of years ago with my wife for our anniversary. As the day would end, we found a spot that we liked on the ship. My wife had learned how to knit, so she would knit, and I would sit next to her and remember the day and what was happening, and then draw and write those thoughts down in the book. And some days I would take the book with me and draw it on site. So if there was something interesting, like a totem that I was interested in, I would draw a picture of that. And a lot of times I would do drawings and just leave blank space, knowing that when I came to the end of the day, I'd have space to fill in my thoughts and feelings about that day. And I think it was important to do it, you know, at the end of the day, so it didn't get too far away from me. And I've done that as well in Washington, D.C., and other places. And it really helps when I go back to look at that. And I think having kids, it's fun for them to look back. And I think because you document that information in more detail, you can more vividly remember what happened. And then on top of just writing what happened, you've got actual drawings of, you know, you being in, you know, at the Washington Monument and drawing a picture of what that looks like. Or in our case, you know, we went to the museum and saw Abraham Lincoln's hat. So I drew a picture of the hat, and you know, that was memorable for my son. So for him to look at those notes now, that's got some more meaning. So I think that's an interesting way to go. I think there may also be some ways to document experiences in general. So just for fun, when I got my first iPhone, an iPhone 3GS, I took a page in a Moleskin and I just documented the unboxing. Because, you know, you see all these photographic unboxings or video unboxings. There never had been a sketchnoted unboxing. And so I thought it would be fun to, in the middle, you know, draw a picture of the iPhone and then around the edges sort of note the things that seemed to impress me as I began opening the box. Like, what were the things that I seemed to notice right away, and capture those. And so you can see that up in my Flickr stream as well, and you can see what that looks like. So I think there are even maybe other opportunities to capture experiences, whatever they be. I mean, we're experiencing all kinds of things all the time. We're even thinking about solutions, maybe documenting that in a way like maybe Leonardo did with his notebooks, where he documented his thinking and his inventions and then wrote notes so that if he came back to it, he could pick that up and continue. So I think there's plenty of applications that this style of note-taking can be used for.
Could you use it to capture ideas from a book you're reading, for example?
Right. That's another good instance where, you know, you're capturing ideas as you go along. I think Jessica Esch, who's one of the featured sketchnoters in the book, has done that. I think she did the book Power of Pull, which you can see in the book, a sample of her sketch notes from reading that book. And, you know, you just build it over time as you encounter ideas that are interesting. So, yeah, that's definitely a great use of the technique.
That's a great transition to my next question. I noticed that your book contains numerous tips from other people, two-page spreads of sketch notes created by other people that are interspersed throughout the book. Who are these people, and how are you associated with them, Mike?
Well, the sketch noters, the featured sketch noters in the book, there are 15 of them, people that I've worked with before, either just, you know, having a conversation with or admiring their work. I think all of them have been featured on my sketchnotearmy.com website, where I saw some work they did and I wanted to share it with others. So I knew them before and chose those 15 to represent themselves in the book. And the idea was, one of the most fascinating things about sketchnotes for me is just seeing how different they are. You would think that after a while, okay, this person is going to copy that person and it's going to look the same. And it doesn't work that way. It seems like there's like this endless, you know, the personality, because it's so integrated, means that the notes that you take, not only the style of how you do them, but the things that you find interesting and relevant may be different than me. And so it's really fascinating to see how different the style and the structure and the thinking is of those individuals. So as I've got to know them, I reached out to them and invited them to have a two-page spread in the book. The only limitations they had were, you know, you had two colors because that was limited, black and orange. And I gave them some guidelines about, you know, tell us who you are, if there's some place to go find more about you. Tell me about that, and then give me some tips, some things you've learned in your couple of years of sketchnoting that you can share with others reading the book. So that's how that all worked, and it worked out really well. I'm really pleased with all their work and the variety of both.
You're absolutely right. When I looked through the book and I saw those two-page spreads, I noticed a great variation in the visual styles of the different sketchnotes. I think that's especially valuable to someone who's curious about sketchnoting but has never tried it. Just to see all those different examples of many people's work is a great approach, in my opinion.
I think so, and I think, you know, there was an additional thinking there too, that the people that I chose were a spectrum of skill levels. So, for instance, Eva Lotta Lam or Garen Lamson, those are two that are in the book. They're accomplished illustrators. They're really good with pen and pencil, and you know, they were able to produce some amazing looking artwork in there. I mean, it's literally artwork in there. And then at the other end, you have, you know, Jessica Esch or Benebi Aka, who are UX designers or user experience designers. And they don't call themselves artists at all, but they still love sort of working with the structure and representing ideas. And so there's a spectrum not only of personalities, but even like skill levels, so that if someone picks it up and maybe they think, oh, I'm not really a great artist, they can look and they're like, well, okay, this person's got a two-page spread and they're just a regular person like me. You know, they're not, you know, a professional illustrator, they're just a person, and it seems to work for them. So maybe that could work for me.
I noticed in the book that you talk about photographing your sketch notes immediately after you make them. Does that give you the ability to tag these images and make your notes more searchable? And if so, is there a software application that you use to index all of your sketch note images and make them easier to search and find specific drawings that you've made?
You know, that probably could be, that's something I could certainly explore even more than I have. Mainly the solution there for me was to capture the sketch notes in case my book were to be lost or damaged, which hasn't happened yet, but I've had books explode on me, like the bindings break apart and, you know, trying to sketch note with signatures falling out of books and, or, you know, always, I've always been trying to be prepared. One of the things I suggest in the book is always have spares. And so that sort of extends that thinking that I'd like to have backups of the work that I do in case something terrible were to happen. My luggage is lost in an airplane or whatever. But I think also that solution ended up becoming an interesting opportunity to share the sketch notes. So to give you some context, when you go to South by Southwest Festival, which is this festival in the spring in Austin, Texas, you know, if you're on Twitter, either you're there and you're having a great time or you're not there and you're sort of cursing everybody who is saying how such a great time they're having. And so, you know, people that are not there get frustrated. And a couple of years ago, I thought, well, what would happen instead of just tweeting comments or how great things are? What if I took pictures immediately after I would sketch note events and put them on Twitter so that people would feel, instead of, you know, separated from me, that they would actually feel connected to me? Amazingly, that worked out as I sort of guessed it might, that people seemed excited to see the stuff. They felt like it was immediate, like they were actually there, but even though they weren't there, so they were more included than separated. So there was, you know, some additional byproducts. But then focusing on the tagging aspect, you know, I typically post them on Flickr. I try to do some tagging. There's some interesting things Flickr offers, the ability to highlight areas and leave comments and so forth. So that's kind of cool. I think it would be interesting to import sketch notes into, say, Evernote and maybe put some really extensive tagging features in there, or even seeing how well their OCR capability would be to capture that stuff. The challenge with handwritten notes, though, is that if you're trying to capture every detail in a tagged way, that might be a lot of overhead for them, where maybe it's just easier to capture some level of tagging or information and then look and look visually look at them because they're more compact and you don't have so much to process through. So
here's the reason I was asking about this. Over the years, I've done a lot of exploring into different methods of capturing my ideas, and I've tried all kinds of paper-based systems and software. Evernote is my current tool of choice, and one of the challenges that I find with a paper-based system is that after a few years, you may have dozens of notebooks. And let's say you're looking for that one cool idea that you know you recorded, but you just can't seem to remember which notebook it's in. And if there was some way you could index that sketchnote photo to a physical location, say a certain notebook number and page number, that would enable you to find your drawings much faster than paging through a pile of notebooks.
It seems like that certainly could be done. I've not been as great about archiving that kind of information as far as I, you know, connecting the online and the offline together. That's a really interesting idea where maybe the books are numbered and then part of the title or a tag indicates that number and that indicates a location of some kind. Maybe there's another database that shows you if you have this number, then this is where the book resides. I imagine a really interesting person to have on relating to that might be a library science person. How do they deal with books in a library? Maybe there's some knowledge to be learned there, but I'm sure that can be done. I guess the question is if it's really important, then it's probably worth the overhead of inputting it in the front end.
Right.
A lot of people are just, you know, so busy that they're just not thinking that far ahead, or maybe it's not that important to them. I do it to a limited degree, but you know, I guess it really depends on what you want to get out of it. I'm sure that you could certainly load all kinds of meta information that would help you find that little detail a little bit easier.
I suppose it's like any other system. You'd have to be extremely disciplined and consistent about doing it in order to make it valuable. The minute you don't, then you have a problem.
Yep, exactly.
At your recent book launch in Milwaukee, you demonstrated some basic sketchnoting techniques using a tablet. What's your app of choice for doing it on mobile devices?
Well, there's a couple that I like. The one that I used on in front of the room at the launch was an app called Penultimate. It's designed to be sort of a replacement for a notebook. It's black and white. There are some basic colors available and brushes and erasers. So there's basic tools, but essentially it's like using ink on paper. And they put a lot of effort into making that ink engine feel really like a lot like ink on paper. So some of the details and the way that it lays on paper on the screen feel a lot like ink would. I think actually I just heard that those guys were picked up by Evernote. So it's actually got some integration into Evernote that I didn't know about until last week, I think. So if you're an Evernote user, that might be another reason to look into Penultimate. I also like Adobe Ideas. Adobe Ideas has, I think, an infinite canvas, so you can make a huge document and zoom in and out to get detail. And it has some nice features as well, layering and other things that can be useful if you need that kind of detail, color, and so forth. It also can generate a vectorized PDF document, so that the documents are pretty small because it's using vector points to draw those. And if you're not a great artist, if you draw circles or squares, it tries to smooth them out so it actually looks a little better than maybe if you just used a pen and ink thing. And two other apps that are interesting. One is called Procreate. It's a little bit more of a drawing application, but it's been optimized for both regular iPads as well as Retina iPads, so you can get larger documents and make use of that extra space. It's got all the brushes and features that you would think in a drawing application. So that's kind of cool. And then the last one is one that was popular not too long ago called Paper. And it's a much simpler application. I think all the tools are hidden off the screen so you can focus on drawing. Everything is saved in sort of a notebook format, so you can have multiple notebooks for subjects if you want to divide that way. It can export information. And then when you get in the app, they're in-app purchases to buy things like color pickers and brushes and pencils and so forth like that. So there are four. I know there must be many more that I'm missing. I've not really explored this area, and that's something I'm going to look into this next year to be a little more aware of, like, some of the tools digitally that you can use, and exploring as well, like, this idea of zooming. So zooming into an area and drawing something and then zooming out and building sort of a larger document one screen at a time. So that's another interesting thing I'd like to explore.
What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of sketchnoting on a tablet versus paper?
Well, I think the big advantage is, a tablet is sort of endless. You'd never run out of paper. You can fill up a book. It's a lot harder to fill up an iPad or a Nexus or something like that if you're using an application to the limit of whatever that available memory storage is, I suppose, but that's pretty high. It's pretty portable. You can bring your references, reference information as well. If you've got a connectivity, you can use it for finding reference information. Like if you're going to a conference and you need to find out what this topic is that they're going to discuss, you can do that research while you wait. I think it's got for instance, that 10-inch iPad's got a pretty large screen. So, I mean, it's reasonably sized and it's portable. The battery lasts a pretty long time. Maybe from the other side of it, one of the things I like about paper is it's pretty reliable. I don't have to worry about the batteries ever going out. So even though the iPad's got 10-hour battery, eventually it does go out. Drawing on the iPad doesn't feel like paper. And if you're the challenge I'm facing now is probably the solution is to find a zooming and panning solution to be able to do larger sketch notes. But because I've built my style kind of around linear books, that seems to be the way that I think and capture information. So the resolution of the iPad seems still a little bit rough for the way that I work. Like I can get it to a certain degree, and maybe that's a limitation that I need to try and use for as a challenge instead of something to push me away. But so that's a limitation there. And paper is archival and it probably lasts forever. So that notebook that I create might be available for my great grandkids where, who knows where this digital stuff we're doing now, where will that go, or will it be carried forward? Hopefully it will, but those are some things to think about as you do it. If it's something for the moment that you're just going to use now and maybe you wouldn't use in 10 years, then maybe that's fine. And I think each have their trade-offs, so you just have to find what works best for you and try them out.
As we draw this podcast to a close, Mike, is there anything else about sketchnoting that we haven't covered which you think it's important for our listeners to know about?
Well, I think the big message of the book is, if you're not an artist, you can do this. You can do great sketchnotes if you're not an artist. And I think as I talked to people as I was working on the book and about the ideas of sketchnoting and what it was about, sort of often the first knee-jerk reaction from people was, I'm not an artist, I can't do that. And I would quickly counter and say, well, you don't really have to be an artist. You know, the book talks about not only do I try to encourage people that aren't artists to give it a try, but I give in chapter 7 specifically lots of workshop activities or workbook activities that people can do, like drawing people, drawing faces. This idea that you can build lots and lots of things with five simple objects, a square, triangle, circle, a line, and a dot. And by mixing those elements together, if you start thinking about how things are built of those elements, you can sort of mentally create really simple drawings of objects. So that image or that those two ideas are really important, that you don't have to be an artist to do this, and that the book is providing some ways for you to move beyond feeling like you have to be an artist to do it and giving you solutions so you can start sketchnoting. Or, I mean, these techniques can work for mind mapping or any other visual thinking exercise, especially if you feel, you know, unqualified to do that kind of stuff.
So where can our listeners learn more about the book and your excellent work online, Mike?
Well, the best place to go is the book page, rohdesign.com/book. So it's rohdesign.com/book. You can also find it at peachpit.com or amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. Any of those booksellers have it available. If you look for the Sketchnote Handbook, you'll find that. I recommend the video edition. So the Sketchnote Handbook video edition is the one I recommend the most because it includes the paper book. And then in the back is a code that you can use to log in at peachpit.com and stream 20 videos that supplement the book. It covers the same information, but from a different perspective. So you actually see over my shoulder as I draw and teach you how to use these objects and watch as I sketchnote and see how things unfold on the paper in that way. So that's the one I think is the best. You can also just get the book. There's a PDF version. There's a Kindle version. So there's a variety of versions that you can get. So if you're a paper person and you want to have that, you can do that. If you like an iPad, you can do that. And we're working on other packages as well to be released soon. So hopefully I have some announcements about some additional combinations of things like all virtual packages and stuff that we will hopefully have up and ready for you soon. But any bookstore should have it. If you have a local bookstore and you like to get it in there, you can find the ISBN number on Amazon and request that your local bookstore carry that, and they'll bring it in. So it's pretty much available all over the place and all over the world.
Excellent. Thanks for your time today, Mike. It's been a fascinating conversation. Good luck with the book. It's definitely an excellent one, highly recommended. And I would encourage listeners to buy the physical version versus the Kindle, because I believe having the book in front of you gives you a much better sense of the richness of some of these sketch notes. Seeing some of the two-page spreads, for example, at one time instead of one page at a time on the Kindle is important with a book like this. Also, I definitely recommend that you get the video version of the book. I had a chance to watch several of them so far, and they're very good. Thanks again, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Chuck. I appreciate you having me on.